Appreciation. And it's really is a turning point.
Everybody wants to know what you're waiting for. Nick, to sit down.
Nick, we gotta begin.
I am.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Portland City Council. Sorry for the delay. The first thing we have before beginning official proceedings of council, so we have young folks coming in and talk to us about issues of importance to the youth in our community. And we have some folks here with us from New Avenues for Youth. And if you folks would come up so we could have your testimony. Just want to tell you a little bit about New Avenues for Youth. It helps homeless youth reach their potential by offering a continuum of outcome-based services that empower homeless youth to exit street life and prevent other youth from becoming homeless. So with us today are Gavin Workman, Michael Landers Marlowe, and Demetrius Jackson. And any one of you can start, and just say your name when you speak.
I'll go first. Can I move this?
Sure.
My name is Demetrius Jackson. I'm from New Avenues for Youth. So I'm just saying my thing. The first question I was asked was, where do you live and what is your neighborhood like? I don't have a home where I sleep on the regular, but usually I stay at my friend's house on 162nd and Burnside. There's a lot of violence out on that end of town, and there's a lot of shooting, fighting, robberies, and things like that. I don't like it, but I have to deal with it. Did I say all of them?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So the second question I was asked was, how do these issues affect are these issues that affect you, your friends, family, or neighbors? My friends are usually a bad influence on me. They're usually trying to get me to smoke weed, drink beer, and pimp girls, but those are not the type of things I'm into. I like to play basketball, rap, and kick it with friends. The third question that was asked was, what will make your school more successful? Okay. When it comes to school, I wouldn't change anything. It's fine just the way it is, but we could use a new microphone in the music studio. If it was up to me, that's all I would change. The fourth question I was asked was, what would make your schools and neighborhoods safer? My answer was, if the police would do their job, from my point of view, police target young black males like myself, like when we're just standing out, kicking it. They pull up on us, search us, call us names, and say things like, where's the weed at? Or, we know you're selling drugs, but wonder why black people are always scared of the police. Why don't they look at other races like Mexicans, Asians, or Caucasians? The last question was, what would you like the mayor to know about you? That I go to school every day and I'm trying to make myself a better person so one day I could be running for mayor.
Good for you, Demetrius.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I only prepared one answer to one question.
Could you state your name, please?
Oh, yes. Yeah, sorry. I'm Gavin Workman. I'm from New Avenues for Youth. I'm from all over the Northwest. All right. So I only prepared one answer to one question. Okay. And that is, how are the youth today? I have only one answer, and it is an abstract one. We are the punctuation at the end of the sentence. Just what that specific mark is, however, I do not know. We could be an exclamation point, an outburst of alarm, a cry of anger. We could be a period, symbolizing the end. That which came before us is over now, and there may never be another paragraph. We could even be a comma, not an end, but a continuation, for better or for worse. I, however, as of this moment, can only draw one conclusion. Speaking for the youth of today, we are a question mark.
Interesting.
Is that it? Thank you.
I'm Michael Landers. I'm from New Avenues. I've kind of answered all the questions that I felt comfortable with. I'll start. I live at the Janus Youth Shelter on 17th and Alder, and we have a really closed community. Everybody that goes to shelter, you hang out with, basically. We got youth from all walks of life, people from rich families, poor families, drug houses, people that just got out of jail. and all our issues kind of mashed together to make one big issue. And one of the biggest issues we have is it's really hard to get a job as a homeless youth. I would say that's the hardest barrier to overcome as a homeless youth. And as it's a closed community, we all know about it. We all know, oh, well, this person's trying to get a job. They can't get it. So in our community, I think the best way to make our community safer and more successful is to have more job opportunities specifically designed for people that are already low income that are having problems getting off the streets and getting onto their feet. And that'd make our community exponentially safer, exponentially more successful. And about me, I'm 19. I moved up to Portland a year and a half ago. 6 months after I moved up here, I became homeless. And I've been with New Avenues for a year. I've just started the process to go to college, and now I'm trying to get on my feet. But this one issue is keeping me at New Avs. Mm-hmm. And that, I believe, is everything.
I wanted to ask you a question, Michael. Does Janus, New Avenues, or Outside In have employment programs or help you?
They do. New Avenues has a JRT program, job readiness training, which allows you to work at our branch of Ben & Jerry's right off Pioneer Square. Mm-hmm. But it's really hard to get employment there because it's a small store.
Yeah.
And then Outside In has Virginia Woolf. Outside In is really geared towards getting people into it. I think they've got 5 branches going right now. I could be wrong on that. And my girlfriend actually just got a job there. So it's all geared towards getting you that, but it's really hard to because of how small and how few positions there are.
Mm-hmm. And just the general job market out there, do you folks go in or submit resumes and talk to other to businesses or to the Oregon Department of...
I do. I have been for about 6 months now, and it's really hard because everybody hears about job openings at pretty much the same time. And when an employer sees 15 resumes and they've all got the same address and the same phone numbers, a red flag goes up. And then they ask us, you know, where do you live? And I'm the honest kind of guy, and I'm like, well, I live in a youth shelter. And that's another red flag, and they won't hire me. I recently got a job. I have to reapply for it for the campaign that just went, I want to say went awry, but it didn't. That was a big job. They didn't care about living situations, but there aren't many jobs like that. There was a lot of kids who applied and didn't get it because of a criminal history. I just don't think that it helps anything that a lot of kids that are homeless also have a criminal record. It doesn't help them to move along and get out of the situation.
Mayor, may I ask a couple questions?
Sure.
I'm curious, have any of the three of you had experiences with Section 8 vouchers issued by the Housing Authority for rental units?
No, not me.
Are all of you over 18?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And the second question, is it Mr. Jackson?
Mm-hmm.
Since, Mr. Jackson, you indicated you have political aspirations. Be careful what you wish for, by the way. I wanted to ask you, if each of you were sitting in this chair today and you could do one thing that would address concerns that you have about homeless youth in our community, one thing, budget, change in the law, policy shift or something, I'd be interested.
That's what I'd do. I'd change the law. Not like change it, but... I hire a lot of police officers that's good because I ain't going to say all the police officers that I ran to have been like all bad police officers, but I had a couple of encounters. But
so you'd strengthen public safety?
Yeah.
How about you, sir?
What I do? This is something that I've given a little bit of thought to, but education seems to me to be the best way to get out of the situation. I'm currently attempting to attend college, but it's very difficult. It's very pricey. I don't know, perhaps something to do with that.
So furthering your education so you have the skills to get higher wage jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And you, sir?
I would just further along the education program, or the work programs that both Outside In and New Avenues for Youth have, not only adding more training to it, but adding more programs to go into as a job afterwards.
Well, let me say that you've identified jobs, schools, and public safety as answers to this ongoing societal problem. And I thank you for that, because what you're saying is we've got to focus on some very core services and basics. And if we get that right, we'll not only be helping you, but lots of people in our community. So I want you to know that I appreciate the way you frame that, and I think those are the critical issues, particularly as we head into this recession. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here, and thank you for pointing these things out to us. It also goes over the local television network, and so people in the community will be listening to this as well. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let's give these folks a hand. City Council will come to order. Carla, please call the roll.
Adams. Fish.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Saltzman. Potter.
Here.
I'd like to remind folks that prior to offering public testimony to City Council, a lobbyist must declare which lobbying entity they're authorized to represent. Please read the first communication.
Item 1505, request of Essler L. Bovis to address Council regarding medical experiments.
Could you repeat the name?
Essler L. Bovis.
Please call the next.
1506, request of Robert Jesse Hill to address Council regarding refreshing your memory.
You have 3 minutes, and please state your name for the record.
Shalom, praise Jehovah. Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Council, staff, and guests. I am Hill, or Jesse. The clerk got it a little bit wrong. I'm sure it'll be fixed by next month. Last year, there were the four measures to proposing the change. It's not going. I don't see the time. I don't know when my 3 minutes are. One of them was a large concern to me, dealing with the structure of Portland government. As I've expressed previously, my concern is that the size of the council is too small, and I believe there's consensus on that. Unfortunately, the proposal that was given to the public wasn't sufficient. I believe the council should be at least 35 members big, and perhaps only 20 is going to be acceptable in the near future. That could be 10 members elected at large, positions A through J, with four or five districts electing more than one at one time. Because when you have proportional representation, you can represent minority interests. To have to get a majority vote plus one to be the representative is not fair. You need to allow minority representation. And when you elect four or even 10 at one time, then you can win with 25% of the vote or 10% of the vote. But being a commission form of government, the legislative branch has to be completely pulled out and made separate from the executive branch. The problem that I've come across is that the pamphlet produced by County Elections, and Eric Sample is the main liaison for voter publication, did not include the text of the ordinance that would have the proposed changes, those four changes. The state pamphlet had the measure text. The county pamphlet only had a bunch of fors and a bunch of againsts, but it did not have the specific text that the public needs to read. If a pamphlet's going to be mailed out and you have all the for and against statements, you need to have the text of the ordinance. And my understanding from staff, I haven't been able to talk to Andrew Karstrom, I talked to another Andrew, that the city did not send the ordinances to county elections. And they need to do that in the future, and you need to pay for it. The bulk rate, it's already been paid. You get up to like 12 ounces. So adding, you know, 5 to 10 pages of the measure is not going to be a lot. I'm going to give you an example of this one. This is from Pierce County. It's the first county in the state, in the nation, to use ranked choice voting. And they included on pages 37 a charter amendment, a summary and a four statement. I wrote the four statement. And then on page 56, it just takes up one page, you know, dealing with boards and commissions. Here's the text right here in one page. So if it's already being mailed out to voters and residences that makes it for a better decision. I think you need to put another charter review commission together. This was rushed. That's why the League of Voters didn't like it, and you need to do it over. Thank you. That concludes my remarks. Assalamu alaikum. Allahu Akbar.
We don't have a quorum for the consent agenda. Do any commissioners wish to pull any items from the consent agenda?
Are we going to set it over until?
Till next week.
Oh, till next week.
Did you hear that, Commissioner? We're not hearing the consent agenda because we don't have enough votes. So do you wish to pull any items to be heard today?
No, thank you, Mayor.
Commissioner?
No.
Okay. So move to the 9:30. The consent agenda will be held over until next Wednesday at 9:30. Yes. Please read the 9:30 a.m. time, sir.
1507, accept the first annual Customer Service Advisory Committee report.
The folks could come up. Thank you. I want to thank the committee. I think you put a lot of time and effort into this report, and I really appreciate it. We know that customer service is so important to our community. We know that by being responsive to our community and inviting them to stay engaged with our government, that we have a better product in the end. I really appreciate the fact that you've taken a thoughtful approach to working towards a culture of customer service within the city. Making customer service a part of everything we do, I believe, increases its relevance to the day-to-day work of our employees. And I know that customer service is important to the incoming mayor, and that today's report gives a great way forward to continue improving service in the years to come. So thank you for your work, and please proceed.
My name is John Dutt, and I'm with the City of Portland Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I supervise the City of Portland Multnomah County Information and Referral Program, and today I'm here as the chairperson of the Customer Service Advisory Committee.
My name is Jeremy Van Kuren. I'm with Mayor Potter's office, and I sit on the committee.
I'm Elisa Kaur. I'm the Customer Service Manager for the Bureau of Development Services.
So today we're here to present our first annual report of our Customer Service Advisory Committee. We're going to go through a presentation. Elisa's going to do the past, sort of bring you up to speed on where we came from and what we've done. Jeremy's going to do the presentation on sort of the present, where we're at in terms of going over the report a little bit. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the future and some ideas that we have. But before we do that, we wanted to ask a couple of rhetorical questions. First of all, should the government care about customer service? And these are questions that we've asked people in the bureaus as we've been doing our work with them. And usually that's an immediate yes. That's kind of a no-brainer, I think, for anybody that, you know, of course we should do customer service. But then when you ask why should we do customer service, that's sometimes a little bit trickier, and there's a lot of answers. But I guess today what I'd like to suggest should be the main reason is public trust, faith in government. I think right now in particular, this is a historic time in terms of financially, you know, the outlook isn't that great. There's a lot of government involvement through discussions about economic stimulus and government wanting to lead. However, unfortunately, sometimes the perception of customer service, I think, isn't that positive among certain segments of the population. I don't know about you, but it seems to me like jokes about government workers are probably second only to jokes about lawyers. So if you work in the city attorney's office, you've got it doubly bad. But it really shouldn't be that way. But unfortunately, I think for a lot of folks, that's kind of how they look at government.
By the way, I've found, as someone who's both a recovering lawyer and now a public official, that the jokes have great currency until someone actually needs a lawyer or someone to respond to their needs in the public sector, and then they evaporate quickly.
That's true. So it really shouldn't be that way, because civil government should really be about civil service. And leadership, government leadership, should be about service and putting the needs of others ahead of the needs of the organization and serving the public. So I just, before we kick that off, I want to stress the importance of that, especially in today's climate. I want to give kudos to Mayor Potter for initiating BIP 7, which is as you'll learn where we came from, but just that commitment and the rest of the council for the support of the Customer Service Advisory Committee and the work we've been doing. The other thing I'd like to do before we turn it over to Elisa is to introduce the rest of the committee, many of who are here. Sue Klobertanz with the Revenue Bureau. Actually, if you could stand up. All of you. We've got Vincent Woods with Human Resources PDOT. Michael Mills from the Ombudsman's Office, the Ombudsman. Art Alexander with Bureau of Technology Services. And then I know Michael Mock with the Water Bureau. I don't think he's here today. Carol Stalky from Local 189, President. Michael Kaplan is a community member and a business consultant with GK Ventures. Not sure if he was able to make it today or not. And then Jenny Scott is our support from the auditor's office. So that's the rest of the committee. I think I got everybody.
Thank you, folks.
Okay. Well, I'm going to briefly share about the past work of the Customer Service Advisory Committee that brings us to today. The Customer Service Advisory Committee was created by Council Resolution 36438 in September 2006 as one of the BIP number 7 recommendations. Early on, the Customer Service Advisory Committee defined its role as consultants, not regulators, in working with bureaus to achieve improvement in the area of customer service citywide. To initiate our work, the committee defined what we see as the three most important customer service improvement areas, which include 1, creating a culture of customer service citywide, 2, soliciting and monitoring customer feedback to improve service, and 3, workforce development in the area of customer service skills. Focusing on these three key areas was especially important because we heard in the course of our research and discussion with bureaus, we heard from 3 bureaus that told us they did not have customers. So the committee identified that it was vitally important to help bureaus define their roles, who their customers are, whether internal or external, and to also recognize the diversity of services and bureaus that we have in the city. After defining the 3 key improvement areas, the committee set about surveying bureaus about their customer service improvement efforts and compiled a customer service improvement toolkit, which now lives on the Customer Service Advisory Committee's website. The toolkit includes examples of customer improvement areas from bureaus citywide that can be used as a shared resource, evoke thoughtful ideas, and discussion for advancing customer service ideals and be tailored by bureaus to suit their individual needs. Once the toolkit was in place, the committee held a kickoff event in November 2007 that was attended by bureau directors or their designees from each bureau in the city. The committee explained who we are, what we do about the toolkit, and that site teams would be forming comprised of committee members to act as advisors for individual bureaus. We also had in-person meetings with many of the bureaus following the kickoff, which were really helpful. We gathered information from bureaus to compile the status report that we're presenting to you today as part of the budgeting process for 2008-2009 budgets. And now I'm going to turn things over to Jeremy Van Curen to talk about the current work of the committee. Thank you.
Thanks, Elisa. So today we're asking you to accept what is the first annual customer service status report, and that's the culmination of all the work and collaboration that Elisa just described. The most important point I want to make is that the report itself is not a reflection of the quality of customer service that comes from each of the rated bureaus, but it's more a ground level assessment and a map of where bureaus are at progressing towards goals that will improve customer service citywide. The committee decided that the most effective way to improve customer service is to foster a culture of customer service in each bureau. And to that end, we evaluated each bureau's progress in 3 major areas that Elise has already touched on. So I'm going to go over those 3 points. Now, I'm going to give a few representative examples of what we've seen in some of the bureaus. But even though I'm singling a few bureaus out, I also want to emphasize that we saw really great work coming out of all the bureaus that we reviewed. So first, to the goal of incorporating customer service elements into the missions and values of each bureau, as well as their strategic plans, we found really good examples of this in development services. Customer service is clearly reflected in BDS's missions and values and goals, their management expectations, and their employee handbook. In fact, BDS has their own customer service department. The Water Bureau was also strong on this goal with an emphasis on customer service and their Raising the Bar campaign, And they're also currently conducting an organizational development process to find additional areas for customer service improvement. The second overarching goal is to solicit feedback from customers and to use that feedback to improve service delivery. Cable Communications, for example, is currently working on an extensive community outreach process. Police and fire conduct regular community surveying, and BDS solicits feedback through focus groups, which I thought was a unique example. The third goal in our evaluation is the inclusion of customer service in developing the city's workforce. The guiding questions here included, is customer service experience considered during recruitment and hiring? Are employees evaluated on their customer service aptitude during the review process? And do employees receive ongoing customer service training? We found that many bureaus include customer service as part of their hiring process and include it with evaluations. Few bureaus, however, have ongoing training for customer service. We found three bureaus that did. That was Development Services again, the Revenue Bureau, and also PDOT's Parking Enforcement Program. So to finish up this part, I'd like to bring your attention to the chart on the second page of the report. It should be coming up on your PowerPoint now. To evaluate each bureau, we settled on a consumer report style matrix. And this will give you a good visual map of the progress made towards fostering a culture of customer service. The ultimate goal is to accomplish each of these tasks as fully as possible. And I'll turn it over to John to talk about how we work in that direction.
Okay, so the future of customer service. I guess the main message here is that there really is a range of possibilities. There's a lot of things that can be done. First of all, our committee plans to continue the work we've started in terms of working through our site teams with the individual bureaus. We'll be getting more updates in as part of the budget process. So those will start coming in February, and we'll be able to start looking at those in March. The report that we're presenting to you today is really for ending, this past June. So there's, been work going on. A lot of stuff, as you'll notice in that report, there's a lot of half circles in that consumer reports style graphic that we came up with. That's because a lot of things are in progress. A lot of things have been started, but are not really institutionalized. So we hope to see that progress to continue, and we plan to continue to present ourselves as a resource to the bureaus in that work. A couple other things, though, that have come up that I think the committee believes merit some discussion and at least be on the radar. One is a citywide customer service survey. One of the recommendations of BIP 7 was to look at the SEA, the Service Efforts and Accomplishments Survey that the auditor's office does, to see if there was a way to incorporate some customer service questions into that. We had several discussions with the auditor's office about that, and the conclusion on that is that it really wouldn't work, but they did encourage us to look at doing a dedicated citywide customer service survey. As you can tell from the report, there's a number of bureaus that do surveys. Most don't, but some do. But even for the ones that do that, there's not a lot of uniformity, a lot of different types of surveys. So having a citywide customer service survey would really be a way to gauge how well the city as a whole is doing. And also would necessitate some resources to do that. I mean, if you look at the bureaus like the Bureau of Development Services, the Fire Bureau, and the Police Bureau, probably the three main ones that do a real formal survey, they use an outside contractor. They spend $20,000 to $30,000 to conduct those surveys. So, right now we don't have those resources available, but it might be something worth looking at doing a citywide survey that would really give us feedback from the customers. As Jeremy said, our report is really not an evaluation of how well any bureau is doing at providing customer service, but rather their efforts in those sort of key areas of efforts to improve customer service. So,
may I just ask a question? If it was a citywide survey, would it go to all citizens, or would it go to a select cohort? Would it go to people that we've screened as people who have had some point of contact with the city at some point? We're coming back to them,
right?
Or would it have a mechanism to screen whether people have had access and then dig deeper?
Right. A couple of things. One of the things with the service efforts and accomplishments survey that we looked at, and we talked to the auditor's office about incorporating into that, one of the big obstacles there was, you know, their response was, well, a lot of the people that take that survey may not have had any direct services from the city. And so I think if we're doing a customer survey, the first thing you have to do is identify your customer. So I think you would, you know, want to get feedback from folks that have actually had a direct experience. And we have a lot of different types of customers. One of the models we've looked at for surveying customers says, you know, first you got to define it. Are they consumers? Are they constituents? Are they people that are on the receiving end of compliance services? Because you're going to have a very wide range of responses depending on what type of customer you're talking about, and you don't want to be comparing apples to oranges. So it's tricky, and that's where, you know, we would need to work with some folks that have some expertise in that area to figure that out, because I think you do want to make sure that it's meaningful data and that it's
the other thing I would just suggest is, oh, I think a continuing challenge is to get people to respond.
Yep.
You know, we have a foreclosure crisis in our community, and the banks are telling us that they'll send up to 12, 15 pieces of communication to a customer at risk with information about how to solve the problem. People aren't opening the mail and responding. Mm-hmm. We probably all get deluged at dinner time with people who call and want to do a questionnaire on the phone. I get surveys in the mail, and frankly, we're all busy. So thinking about a way where we could encourage people to complete it and send it in and maybe even get some reward for doing so, so that we don't get a self-selected group of maybe the noisiest customers responding. We actually get a more representative group of cross-section.
Yeah. Yeah, and that came up as well in talking to the auditor's office about the SEA survey, the service efforts and accomplishments. They had a concern about the length of the survey, and their response rates have been dwindling. So that was another big issue for that survey and any surveying. So, you know, I don't think our committee, any of us profess to be experts on surveying, so that's where we're saying, you know, we'd really need to be careful with how we go about that and craft that in the best way. But I think, you know, if you look at some of the bureaus that have done successful customer surveying, you know, it's possible, but we would need to work with somebody on that. So the other sort of future possibility that we have talked about as a committee and in working with the bureaus is, you know, as the report indicates, there's a diversity of things going on. We all know that, you know, our city's kind of famous for having a lot of bureaus doing different things, and that's true with our customers. Right now, there's a dozen, probably more than that, systems in place in which we track our customer service information. So one of the ideas we've talked about is a centralized citywide customer management system, which would give us a single system to track requests. We have a lot of different systems across the city. Some are more sophisticated than others. And the tools are out there, the systems are out there to have something that's more of a centralized system where, you know, somebody calls in to request a service, it gets entered into the system and it's tracked. I know I've had the experience of doing some research into these systems across the country, and there's, you know, 50 plus cities that have kind of gone this route and have had a lot of success with that.
If I can just jump in, yeah. Commissioner Leonard, I don't have you have an enterprise bureau, I don't. So I'm just curious with your experience with Water Bureau, would a centralized complaint system where you call a centralized number and commit, and then it came to Water, be preferable than to the current system where customers of the Bureau can complain directly to the Bureau?
This actually gets to the proposal we've been trying to develop, a 311 system, where you had a centralized call center that took not only complaints but also inquiries, and we are bringing a report to council rather soon from BOEC on the first stages of that. So you would have one number you would call, and the people there would handle all the issues related to any inquiry relative to the city, whether that be a complaint, whether that be just a referral, whether that be any question. And then we're also working on developing an online complaint form, if you will, or inquiry, or a format whereby people could have a central place that they would go to fill out a request for work or whatever might be, one place that then would be referred to the appropriate bureau by these personnel.
So if someone had a concern about the water being shut off, they'd call that number.
Call 311.
Then that person would presumably refer it to, would contact water to get a status report on it? Or
that's
to,
right.
Or to
they would have, we would have benchmarks, we would have contact people, and all inquiries would go through that one number, 311.
Yeah, it's, and the backbone of these 311 programs that have been developed across the country is this customer management system, and it, you know, you can imagine it can be a fairly complex system and project to develop, but certainly there are cities that, you know, you call one number to take care of your water bill or reserve a park or file a nuisance complaint, whatever. So having the centralized management system in place would allow for that single system. It also provides feedback mechanisms. People can receive updates via email or log on to the web to find out what happened with their, you know, pothole request. The data that's provided by these systems is tremendous for being able to track trends. You know, what are people calling about? Figuring out ways to improve service delivery and allocate resources. And also, you know, I know one of the themes that we've heard a lot over the last few years is community governance. Having this type of a system in place provides you with real data to base a lot of decisions on and policy decisions about what are the needs out there in the community. And there's a lot of good examples of cities that have gone to these systems that have really been able to change the way they do things. As Commissioner Leonard alluded to already, with this centralized customer management system in place, there's also the potential for a 311 call center, a single call center. Right now we have, I did a list at one point of like 50 hotlines you can call for services across the city. Having that one call to resolve is, to me, you know, a huge step that the city could take in improving customer service. And also it enables us to have consistent service delivery so that you have one group of folks that are hired and trained to provide a certain level of customer service. So I think there's tremendous benefit to that. The downside is, if you look at the cost of doing something like this, just from what I've seen other cities do, you know, you're talking about probably $2 million or more to get a system like this in place, just the customer management system. So, like I said earlier, there's sort of a range of things that can be done. There's the no additional cost option of continue the work that we've begun, and we will continue to do that as long as we have the blessing of council. But we could also spend $3 million as a city to go to a centralized system. But regardless, the future really depends on the continued leadership and support for customer service efforts to help us create the culture of customer service that I think we're seeing a lot of progress, but we need that continued support. Now more than ever, we need servant leadership, and we need to be in the business of customer service. The public trust is really essential during these times, and we just thank you for your support for this committee. Any questions?
I have just a couple. Well, I love that term, servant leadership. My state senator, Avell Gordley, uses that regularly. I think it's a wonderful phrase and aspiration. I see that in the chart that you gave us of sort of a progress report rating bureaus, you also list commissioners' offices.
We did.
Perhaps I am so beyond the curve that I'm not even listed on this. Is that because I wasn't grandfathered in with my predecessor, or right, we need to do some work?
No, this was a report of up till June. So you were
I'd just been sworn in.
You were too new. We left Jeff, but next time you'll definitely.
What's your next cycle so we can make sure we're up to speed?
It's a yearly report, so basically, the bureaus are required as part of the budget process to submit a status report. There's a little one-page template that we devised that's part of the budget documents where they just give us an update on what progress they've made in those three areas. Annually, yeah.
So because I guess I was sworn in June, could we do a six-month report?
Sure.
Have you guys come in and just help us make sure our systems are set up?
Definitely.
I have a feeling we could use some help. yeah. and making sure we're on, heading the right direction.
And we've tried to really communicate with the bureau directors as well as staff within the bureaus, as well as with the commissioner's staff. So we're always happy to, like I said, we really view ourselves as a resource. So our site teams can come out and meet with individuals within bureaus or commissioner's offices. If you have any questions about the report in more detail or concerned about something in there, we'd be happy to talk. And we do have ongoing conversations going with a lot of the bureaus.
So. We'd like to set up a time just to have you come in and walk us through. Two other quick questions. I'm not surprised that Portland Fire and Emergency Services has such a good rating. I mean, they tend to be very efficient in responding to these things. But I see for a lot of other bureaus, there are a lot of these partially completed in process or not stated explicitly, circles with a line through them. Mm-hmm. At what point does that become a problem from your point of view? If that starts showing up year after year, does that mean the message is not getting across? Or?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think what we found, again, this is sort of almost a baseline. Like Jeremy said, sort of a roadmap. It shows us where we're at. I think what you'll find in the report, and especially if you read the narrative on some of them, is, you know, the half circle really means that a lot of stuff is either partially completed or in progress, or in process, or in some cases it's just a lack of information. I mean, as late as last week, we had new information coming in from some of the bureaus. So some of it is just we had incomplete information. Some of it is a lot of bureaus have indicated they've started to do certain things or it's part of their strategic planning process currently. So, but yeah, we definitely would expect to see more filling of the circles, more bullets as we progress. And yeah, obviously if there isn't progress being made that the bureaus indicate is going to be made, then that would be an area.
I would hope that either the mayor or the mayor-elect, as part of the instructions to council and to bureau directors, sets a firm timeline for improvement, at least, because I can understand well-intentioned people will be making progress towards these goals, but there probably needs to be some hard date where it's expected that, you know, people have at least, there's six categories, you'd want at least X number with the bullets. Anyway, I found this work very inspiring. Thank you for your hard work and effort.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you, folks. Did we have a sign-up sheet on this?
We did. No one signed up.
Is anyone here who wishes to address a specific issue? This is a report. Please call the vote.
Bish?
Again, I want to thank all the people listed on the CSAC site team contacts and the presenters for all your hard work. My sense is that at election time, people often talk about customer service and following through on those commitments, but the hard work is actually translating that into action. I'm delighted that we have such a comprehensive approach to this issue. And to whichever one of the three of you said that public trust is linked to how we address this issue, I could not agree more. We sometimes think that people are moved by the big issues of the day, but I will tell you it's spending the extra 2 hours at DMV that really gets under people's skin. It's not being able to figure out how to fill out your taxes that I think really it's the parking ticket you don't think you should have gotten that you spend a week trying to fix. I think most people are actually tee off on those things because they're immediate, they're personal, and they're time consuming. I think you've put us on the path to the right direction. I thank you for your good work. Aye.
Leonard.
I too appreciate the work, and it really is the kind of thing I have focused on since I've been here since in 2002, as Alicia would tell you. Bureau of Development Services really, starting in 2002, embarked on a very comprehensive training program that upped our customer service level to the point now that we just consistently get nice comments from people who interface to get a building permit. But having said that, I would challenge any of you in the audience or even my colleagues here to open up the phone book and find what you do when you find an abandoned car on your street, or who you call for an abandoned car on your street, or who you call for an abandoned car on property. And by the way, there are two different phone numbers and two different bureaus that deal with that. So customer service has to also be about, as we alluded to here, the ease of navigating our system. And so that's why last year with council authority, we began embarking on developing this 311 system that would be this comprehensive call center that, as was alluded to, would cost some money up front to get going, but we would attempt to try to bring people from other bureaus that are providing those individual services into one centralized place. And in terms of the cost, one of the things that we're working on that I think would be great for customer services to ignore some of our current political boundaries that citizens don't recognize and only those of us appear to. So, for instance, the difference between Multnomah County and Portland. People don't really care. They want to be able to call one place and figure out who to talk to. Frankly, Chicago has reduced all, I think it's Chicago, is that right, Michael? Chicago, the contracts with the Chicago airport as well. You call 311 in Chicago and you get service related to the county of or the city of or the Chicago airport by calling that one number, and all those employees that are trained to do that. That's good for the citizens. It also reduces the cost, the startup cost that was alluded to here earlier. So we're, I'm giving you a little preview of a budgetary item that's going to be coming before us based on some work we're doing at the 911 Center that I think will really help extend the customer service we provide people by making the system easier to navigate. And by the system, I mean whether it's Metro or Portland or Multnomah County or PDX. Aye.
Potter.
I really want to thank the committee for their hard work. You know, internally in the organization, it really is important to create that culture of service. And I think that some of the front-end issues, I really support Commissioner Leonard's idea about the 311, because we do have to make it easy and customer-friendly for our community to be able to dial a single number and then provide access to them to the appropriate service. And we also have to make sure that our folks in the city employment really do work towards providing customer service, that they're there to serve the community and that to meet the needs of the community. And I think this is a good effort. Most of the folks I have contact with in the city and that I've heard about just do a great job. But we've got to make sure it's consistent from bureau to bureau and citywide. So thank you, folks, for sort of being that key link in terms of providing us information about how we can make better decisions in that regard, and also keeping us aware of what our requirements are for our community. So thank you. I vote aye. Please read the 10 a.m. time, sir.
Item 1508, accept expanding sustainable development practices in Portland, report and recommendations of the Development Review Advisory Committee.
Did you want to read 1509 as well?
1509, accept the final report on impact assessment and promulgate the impact assessment game as a tool used to review policy prior to implementation.
Mr. Leonard?
So, and you want to come forward as well? And come on forward. Thank you. A year ago this month, the council adopted a resolution directing that the bureaus work together to develop a plan for reducing our impact as a city on greenhouse gases. And to remind everyone, the energy used in residential, commercial, and industrial buildings contribute 43% in the United States to carbon dioxide emissions and 48% in the U.S. to greenhouse gas emissions. So it's not an insignificant issue to try to figure out how to reduce the impact our buildings have on the environment, which doesn't even get into the issue of cars or any other kind of human activity. The Development Review Advisory Committee, of which you see a subcommittee of in front of you, is a group referred to as DRAC at the Bureau of Development Services that we have engaged on a variety of issues since I've been blessed to have the Bureau of Development Services. You've seen them here on the budget. You've seen them here on a variety of issues. And this is not a group that is just an advisory group. We are in a true partnership with the folks that make up this group, which includes developers and builders and others. And their latest work is probably, could be the best example of that. They created, the DRAC created a green building subcommittee that met two times a month for 10 months to develop the report you all should have in your packet that looks like this, the Expanding Sustainable Development Practices in Portland, Oregon. And this report, interestingly, is just the first step in a number of steps in a multi-phase process to develop incentives and to develop benchmarks and to develop a path to constructing in Portland in general, just all kinds of construction in a way that reduces our impact on the environment. It reduces our impact in making the global warming phenomena that the world is experiencing less. And so I want to welcome all of you here and tell you how much I appreciate your work. I know it's been difficult, but I think you're helping us once again as a city set a standard by which other cities look to emulate. And none of us here in Portland are confused that what we do individually will change the world, but we sure show the world how it should behave. And if other cities copied what we did on this issue and others, I think our impact on the world as a race would be much less and would protect the environment for future generations to come. So you played a significant role in that in producing this so far. I know you have more work to do, and I want to thank you and look forward to your remarks.
Great. My name is Simon Tompkinson, and I am the chair of the Development Review Advisory Committee. I'd like to introduce people sitting here. This is our opportunity to update the council on the work that we've done actually for the last 2 years. And in fact, we're going to be interweaving 1508 and 1509 because they're actually tied together in a very intimate way, impact assessment and green building. Because we see ourselves as facilitators of good policy, and we want to be able to actually move things through the city, but also through the bureaus that really have an effect. To my left, we have Steve Hyteen. He will actually be reviewing the function of the DRAC with you. Don Geddes from Walsh Construction will actually be going through the SDC review that we're going through currently. And Dennis Wild will actually be presenting the green building report. I will actually do the impact assessment review and also do a wrap-up for you. And so we're going to get going here. We have a slideshow also, just to give you guys and the community access to what we're talking about. The Development Review Advisory Committee of the City of Portland was established and formalized in Section 3.30.030. It's administered by the Bureau of Development Services, and it's become a critical resource for development bureaus, but also the design and development community. The ordinance was made effective in January 7th, 2005, and it's comprised of 16 volunteer members representing all aspects of the development community, from residential builders to the Port of Portland, to neighborhood groups, design professionals, and also customers at large. And everyone's welcome to our meetings. And in fact, we have many bureaus that aren't necessarily related to BDS or direct development review be at our meetings because we actually have a lot of impact on their overall community. A large part of this has to do with the benefits that we get from our members. What you'll see here are the 16 members that actually comprise our committee. I am actually very honored to serve with these folks. They are the best and brightest from Portland, and I think you'll see that in our report. Absolutely stunning piece of work. Frankly, it's already making impacts nationally because people are starting to talk about it and see it. So we're very excited about that. So without further ado, I will actually pass the torch to Steve.
Morning. Stephen Hyteen, Stephen Hyteen Construction, and Vice Chair of DRAC. The functions for the DRAC have been, the main parts are the reviewing bureau budgets. Our group focused on the transparency and the development review process among the various bureaus that we interact with, and increasing their efficiency and customer service, which is something you were just talking about just before us here. BDS staff updates the committee on budgets and development review and anything that's related to development in the city. The bureaus engaged in the development review process are parks, OSD, very important, you'll hear more about that, water, BES, and PDOT. And each year they present us with relevant components about their budgets for our review and recommendations so that they can gain our support as they come to you folks with that information. So DRAC is actively supporting the fiscal initiatives that they as they come up each year and kind of letting you know what's happening with that. Next, the review of development-related fees and the supporting fees, where there is clear benefits for the development community. Some great examples that we have are the field issuance for remodeling program, for something I have a lot of knowledge with. I was part of the original pilot program for that. And then also the major projects group dealing with larger commercial projects. And I know some of the members here have had great success with that. So excellent relationships there with those. We're also reviewing the development-related programs like public works permitting. Discussions on that are ways to streamline that so things can get done quicker and more efficient, and a little more synergy between the different bureaus on that. And, of course, review development-related policies, so relative to permits. Also, the integration, development, and review of the track system, which is a great way for people in the development community to be able to see what's going on with the stuff that they're working on, where it's at in the process, and the interaction there. The three main projects that we've been working on for this the past year and will continue, and you're going to get that directly from each of the folks here. Again, as Simon mentioned, he's going to be talking about impact assessment and how we've been dealing with that and seeing some ways to really make some inroads there. Don is going to take care of the SDCs and the subcommittee on that. He's going to give you an update on where that's going. And then Dennis here will let you know a little bit more about some of the more fun stuff with the green building and the report that we have for you guys today. So, Simon?
Yeah, great. In 2006, we actually saw a disjunction between how policy was being created for the development community, but also then how the community at large was actually being communicated with. And policies would come through over the transom, and all of a sudden, people would actually take notice. And you get some blowback, basically, from the community in one way or another. An example of that is trees. Another example, I mean, there are several examples like this. Changes in planning, changes in the development world really affect our neighborhoods. And one of the strongest voices in our neighborhoods are the neighborhood associations. What's interesting, though, is that there was never a map, let's say, of how to actually integrate those concerns with how policy was being developed. And so we actually spent a long time looking at how does the process of developing policy for the development community actually hear and directly address the concerns of the neighborhoods and the community at large. The subcommittee, working with stakeholders and city staff, reviewed several case studies to determine if the impact assessment process was working as intended. And the following questions were asked during this process. Does the assessment provide useful information to decision makers when they actually need it? Does the impact assessment foster regulatory discipline? Is the assessment prepared and considered at key decision-making points, both not only for their neighborhoods, but also for city staff? And can impact assessment be used to assess existing regulation and monitor the effectiveness of a new regulation? This was one of the biggest issues that a lot of the communities, but also the development community, has had, which is, what is an effective feedback loop to see what's working, what's not,